Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Marcus Huerta. Did I say that right?
Huerta, yes.
Huerta. There you go.
Good.
I can't.
It's okay. You got Marcos right, which is important.
Hooray! There you go. So Marcus, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So, I am a fan of the show. I was trained as an astronomer. I have a PhD in astronomy. Studied astronomy at Rice University. Been interested in astronomy since I was very little, since like 5 or 6. Since then, I have sort of segued out of the science world. I mean, I went to grad school, did a postdoc, but I've sort of segued into the Washington, D.C. world. I do science policy. But one of the first things I did here was work for the American Astronomical Society. So I worked for sort of the astronomy community. But a huge Star Trek fan and very happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you on. And I think over the last 60 episodes or so, you may be our first guest, my first guest, who has some kind of advanced degree in a science. So this is exciting.
Yes.
There is very little science in the episode
really,
we watched.
Yeah, nothing really astrophysical going on here whatsoever.
Which is slightly disappointing.
I'm sure I'll find some way to start talking about science.
Well, good. So tell us a little bit about, we're going to talk about Star Trek. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Yes, definitely. Big Star Trek fan. I think it started probably with the movies. I definitely remember seeing Star Trek 4 in the theater with my mom, I think, when I was little. And then I got into The Next Generation, like you, I think, and many of your guests, at some point, in the 80s. I took it very literally. I remember I watched the first time I saw The Next Generation. I'm like, I saw Data, and he was acting kind of strange. I'm like, is that Spock's brother? And which makes no sense. I mean, he looks nothing like a Vulcan, right? Or I guess not brother, son or something. But I really thought they needed to be biologically related.
Well, it's possible because Spock's mom is a human, right? So she could have went and had another liaison with a robot.
Right. So I don't know what I was thinking. But so The Next Generation, I'll just skip ahead to saying that it is my favorite show. I think it's the one I grew up with, like so many of your other guests have said. Big fan. And then I kept going. And, I watched Deep Space Nine. I think at some point I bailed on Voyager and then came back and then didn't give Enterprise much of a chance at all. But I've always liked the old movies. I mean, I like Star Trek 2, Star Trek 4, Star Trek 6. Mm-hmm. 3 is not even that bad.
Well, 3, I have this theory. I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast or not. Because I rewatched all the movies a couple of years ago when I got them on Blu-ray. Because I thought, well, I have them on Blu-ray. I should watch them. I paid to get this whole box set. So I watched them all in order. Obviously, because why would I do it in any other way? Star Trek, the first Star Trek, the motion picture, which I also got to see in the movie theater recently, maybe last year. So that was a fun experience. Not a great movie.
A little too long.
Very, very long.
Isn't the director's cut shorter? Like, isn't the DVD? I thought they like removed some scenes to make it shorter for home release once.
That sounds about right. There are. I understand what they were doing. There are lots of loving shots of sweeping past ships and things very slowly, and you get this atmospheric kind of cinematic space feeling. But then those shots go on for like 15 minutes, and you think, well, maybe.
Didn't they reuse some of those loving shots of the Enterprise in Star Trek 2? I think that's what I've heard.
They did. Yeah. Well, they spent so much money on them. They're like, I've got to reuse them.
It does look amazing. But
yeah,
I think it was a little too 2001, maybe. They were channeling some of that beautiful, slow, Kubrick sort of esque.
I think that is exactly what they were doing. Yeah. Then Star Trek 2, obviously Star Trek 2 is the best Star Trek movie ever made.
Yes.
Possibly.
Agreed completely.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Absolutely. I rewatch it every so often. It's great.
It's fantastic.
I mean, it has some problems here and there, but I love it so much that I forgive it.
Exactly.
It's strange.
And Star Trek IV, like you said, a lot of fun. A good Star Trek movie. And one of my favorite Star Trek movies for very different reasons than Star Trek II. And then we get Star Trek III, right? People malign it. Perhaps unjustly, a little plug for Unjustly Maligned on the Incomparable Network. But if you watch it, I feel like people don't consider it in the setting that it should be. Because if you watch Star Trek 2, Star Trek 3, and Star Trek 4...
It's the connective tissue, really.
Exactly.
Right?
If you watch them one right after the other, Star Trek 3 is not so bad.
No, I think you have to watch... In fact, this is sort of a struggle. I made my fiancé watch Star Trek 2 I wanted to see 4, but I know 3 is just sort of there. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not. But you need to see it. You can't really skip it. I had a little marathon with some friends of mine on a birthday many, many years ago, and we had a little 2, 3, 4 little mini marathon over a couple of days. I think it holds up that way.
Yes, and Star Trek 3 is what Christopher Lloyd is in Star Trek 3, is that right?
Yes, Klingon. So the Klingons come back, and suddenly they're out for vengeance.
That's right. They want to get that Kirk. So there you go. Long story short, if you watch Star Trek 3 by itself, not so great. If you watch it sandwiched between 2 and 4, it's all right.
Exactly. I agree. It's by far the best of the, odd, the 1,
yes,
3, 5.
I mean, Star Trek 5, come on now.
Oh, I saw that in the theater, too. Ouch.
Oh, man. I think I saw that in the theater as well.
I forget. What is your opinion on the Abrams films? Do you like the new Abrams films?
I do like the new Abrams films. I know that some people are annoyed because they don't feel Star Trek-y enough for them, and they feel a little more Star Wars-y, I suppose, and all the lens flare and stuff. But I thought it was clever to start the whole alternate reality thing. I think the casting is fantastic.
There's a lot of good things about them. I enjoy them. I don't know if you needed to kill billions of Vulcans to reset the timeline.
There's that.
I don't know if that was necessary. And then, I don't know, the most recent one, Into Darkness, I felt really leaned on my affection for Wrath of Khan.
Totally.
And I don't know how I felt about that. But they're well made. They're exciting. They're getting. I just feel like Star Trek fundamentally needs to be sort of a cerebral television show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why I like Next Generation and the sort of the 24th century series, by and large.
Yeah, the J.J. Abrams movies, while fun and action-packed, I would not call them cerebral in any way. Of course, I wouldn't. The original series, which you didn't list, actually, in your discussion of the shows
that
you
had
watched.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. I never really watched the original series. It wasn't really on in repeats. By the time they were sort of repeating Star Trek shows a lot, it was Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would program my VCR to record Next Gen because it was on at like 11 p.m. on the local Houston channel. And then I'd watch it the next day. Some interesting ads air, by the way, when Star Trek aired at 11 p.m. in Houston. Which ads I didn't quite understand as a small child. But
Party line ads.
Yeah,
passed.
Exactly. A lot of 1-900 numbers. But yeah, the original series, I mean, I went back, I think there was an incomparable episode where I think people picked like TOS episodes, and I tried to watch some of those, but I don't think I got very far. And I did watch Space Seed. I've seen Space Seed more than once. In fact, I think I had friends over a couple of years ago to watch Space Seed and then watch Wrath of Khan.
Ah, that's a good double feature, I think. Yeah.
I like how Kirk defeats him in hand-to-hand combat at the end of Space Seed. That's how it goes down.
Well, I was going to say that the original series itself was an interesting mix of, clearly it's, Gene Roddenberry pitched it as Wagon Train in Space. So it's a Western in space. So there's a lot of two modern sensibilities, awkwardly choreographed fight scenes, or maybe not awkwardly choreographed, but obviously fake looking. And that's just theatrical. We'll call it theatrical.
Yeah.
Because that was of the time, right? That's what you did.
That's fair. I mean, it's a very different show. And we've talked about, even rewatching Next Generation, which I've done a little bit of the last few years since it's been on Netflix and Amazon streaming. Even that has got the pacing is really different. Like, I think I think you talked about this on the last several episodes, that it's kind of languid. It's nothing like sort of a TV show made today.
No, I mean, even if you compare an Enterprise episode, which, not my favorite Star Trek series, but the most modern one we have at the moment, to a Next Generation episode, it's much faster paced. And then you compare a Next Generation episode to an original series episode, and the original series episodes are A, longer, and B, just take their sweet time to get anything done. It is just amazing. And I think I was talking with maybe on the episode of Liz, where we talked about, I forget what episode we were talking about, that they just love shooting loving shots of people walking down corridors forever. Much like Doctor Who. That's why we were talking about it. There's a lot of walking down corridors in Doctor Who as well.
That's true.
Old Doctor Who. Nowadays, they run down the corridors.
I tried to watch some old Doctor Who as well, and that was a struggle. I like the new show a lot, and I've watched all of those, but I tried to watch some sort of classic ones, and it was also just very different and a little harder to sort of wrap my head around.
Yeah, I can't. I tried that as well, and I just could not get through it. And I am a casual Doctor Who fan, So I did not feel like I needed to stick through it. I was like, this is not good. I'm not watching it. So Doctor Who fans, don't call me or anything. But yeah. It's fine. You enjoy it. There's more Doctor Who for you.
It's like you say, there's a room out there for many fandoms, right?
Exactly. You don't need me to love Doctor Who. But let's talk about the episode that we watched.
Right.
Because we spent a lot of time talking about Star Trek and a small amount of time talking about Doctor Who, but enough of that. The episode we watched, luckily enough for you, is a Next Generation episode. One of the late season Next Generation.
Season 6.
So you think, okay, I'm in for something good. Maybe not. Man of the People, episode 3 of season 6, which is an episode when I sent this to you as your assignment. I had no memory whatsoever of this episode.
As soon as I Googled the title, or as soon as I clicked on the link, I'm like, I immediately remembered it. But like the title did not associate with the episode.
And I don't know, after having watched the episode, the first scene as I watched, it clicked and I remembered the episode. I don't understand really the title with the episode, I suppose. So it revolves around this kind of ambassador slash, well, I guess he's not an ambassador, he's like a mediator, and I guess that he is a man of the people because he goes to war-torn places and tries to...
But the title doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't know. But it doesn't... he's a man, at least. So.
I mean, we could probably spend a whole podcast about whether... I mean, a whole... could be an entire podcast about whether Star Trek titles really match up to their plots.
It's true. It did make me ponder Star Trek titles and think about how the original series had these ridiculously long titles, some of the episodes, and then in Next Generation, they went for slightly shorter ones, and then later on in like Voyager, Deep Space Nine, they usually went with like one-word titles. So it's just interesting how they come
up. Idiot, but I've never quite understood Best of Both Worlds as a title. Like, is it the Borg world versus the human world? I'm not sure I understand that title. And it's one of my favorite, obviously the best episode of Next Generation of all time.
Yes, I think that perhaps they are saying that Captain Picard is the best of both the human and Borg worlds. I don't know. Who knows? But anyway, titles are perplexing. This title makes little sense. I don't know what you would call it otherwise, except maybe creepy mediator or something. But without giving away what happens in this episode. But this is the episode in which basically Deanna Troi ages rapidly and goes crazy. Because this ambassador has...
mentally hijacked her or whatever.
Shunts his dark... emotions and desires, I guess, into her.
It's a very strange concept.
And basically, it's the picture of Dorian Gray, right?
Right, yes. I read that on the Memory Alpha link.
It doesn't make a lot of sense in this episode, though.
I started reading the Memory Alpha page, and then I stopped because I didn't want it to taint sort of my opinions. but I did remember the Dorian Gray sort of reference. Mm-hmm. And that apparently it was written quickly.
Yes, as I was looking, because I don't remember Star Trek episode titles, and I don't remember the order in which they aired. I know a lot of people do. I am not one of those people. So I, you know, dialed this up on the old Amazon Prime, and I saw, this episode is what I'm going to watch. The very next episode is Relic, in which Scotty comes back, and I'm like, why couldn't we have watched that one?
We were supposed to, apparently. They had just gotten Relics produced in time.
It's very sad, but not that I don't think that this is a bad episode. I don't think it's a great episode. It certainly doesn't have James Doohan in it, so that is a minus for it.
Sort of in that meaty middle of the curve of Star Trek episodes, I think.
Mm-hmm. It is not bad, but it is not good either.
It's not like threshold bad or, you know.
Oh, no.
Or whatever that Enterprise episode is where the princess gets stuck in the escape pod with the engineer and they. I don't know what that one's called.
It was not even worth looking up. So this is an episode, one of the rare kinds of Next Generation episodes that features Deanna Troi prominently. Mm-hmm. She is generally, I don't want to, minimize her impact on the series because I think the writers did that all by themselves. She is kind of a background character in most of the episodes that I wouldn't even say featured in. She generally stands back and, I'm sensing unease or something, and then everyone's like, okay, thanks, Deanna, and then they leave her alone.
Yeah, there are only a few episodes where she really is pivotal. I mean, disaster, right? She has to take over. Wait. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And then there's one where she has to take the command test, and that's like a sort of a Troy-centric episode.
Yes.
She becomes a Romulan.
She does.
And gets somehow no one can tell that she's not actually speaking Romulan, but...
And I know that what's her, the actor, what's her name? Marina Sirtis. Marina Sirtis, there you go. She was, when they did Generations, she was excited because finally Deanna Troi could drive the Enterprise, like pilot the Enterprise, right? And then, of course, the writers, she's the first time she's piloting it, and what does she have to do? She has to crash it into a planet.
I was very sad when the Enterprise D died in Generations. I was hoping to see it on the big screen for longer.
It didn't last very long. Although it was a very exciting scene where they detached the saucer and it was crash landing.
I think that's one instance where the warp core ejection system actually works, or does it not work? I can't remember.
I don't remember if it worked or not.
Not a reliable system.
No. But good to have, just in case. Anyway. The Enterprise E, I mean, I like the Enterprise E, but the Enterprise D has such good memories. Because, you know, obviously, 7 seasons of The Next Generation, you come to think of the Enterprise as a character who is featured much more than Deanna Troi, generally. Sadly for her. But what do you think of Counselor Troi as a character?
I like her. I mean, I think Marina Sirtis is actually a pretty good actress, but I think you're right. The writers don't give her a whole lot to do in the show. I think she's very good. I mean, even though the plot of the one where she becomes a Romulan isn't has some problems, given that she doesn't speak Romulan, but like, set that aside, I think she does a good job in that. I think they try and flesh her out a little bit towards the end, like when she like takes the command test and stuff. But I think you're right. A lot of it is I sense a great... you know, anger out there. You know, I mean, it goes back to the pilot, right? She senses Q, but in sort of this nebulous way. I kind of have an issue with telepathy in general in science fiction. I feel like a lot of science fiction goes to this telepathic well, which is not, and it's sort of mysterious and kind of immaterial, and technology can't really block it or interface with it. And I don't know why that's necessary, why science fiction writers feel like they need telepaths, but it seems to be a thing.
And she's not even, I guess she's a type of telepath, but she's an empath, right? Yeah. So she can't telepath. Read your mind, but she can sense what you're feeling. Yeah. As Alcar mentions, it would be useful to have as a diplomat and a mediator, because you can sense how people are actually feeling, even despite what they're projecting out in the world, right? So it's a useful talent.
Isn't there like a secret empath that like... negotiates, I forget that episode, but he negotiates like a wormhole treaty, and he's like a quarter empath or something, and no one knows that he's an empath.
I believe that is correct. And it would be great if the title of the episode were Secret Empath. But I don't think that is.
I'm sure you'll get to that one eventually, I'm sure.
And I think the other problem I find with Counselor Troi is, I think I agree with you. I think that she's a great actress. She does the best job she can with the material she's given. But the character also seems to be, unfortunately, defined by her relationships as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like her relationship with her mom, her relationship with Riker.
Mm-hmm. So she is less of like a standalone character. Like, we don't know a whole lot about Deanna Troi as a character, but we know that, you know, she and Riker used to have this relationship, and they still have, they're still Imzadi, and they have this kind of flirtatious kind of thing going, but they're not.
I mean, if you think about it, some of her most prominent episodes involve, like, either a man that comes into her life, or the duplicate Riker that shows up in season 6, or...
or her mom is visiting her mom. The ship, and she's like, oh, yeah, mom.
Right. Though I do love those episodes where Michelle Barrett comes on.
Oh, yes. Loxana Troi is a fantastic character.
Yeah. If only they'd been Counselor Troi as interesting as Loxana Troi.
I know, and Loxana Troi is a full telepath, so she could read your thoughts to usually hilarious results. But this episode continues that tradition of a man coming aboard, and Deanna Troi, there's something going on between them, and usually it ends up poorly for Deanna, and that happens in this episode. Let's talk a little bit about Alcar. They find, you know, the Enterprise is going somewhere, and they come across a transport that's under attack. So they go to rescue the transport. The attackers flee because they're scared of the Enterprise, and the transporter guy's like, hey, I need to beam over some passengers. And Captain Picard's like, okay, beam them over. They beam them over. And this is a weird interaction. Captain Picard, they beam them over. Captain Picard turns to Counselor Troi and basically sends her to meet them and, like, set them up with rooms. And I was thinking, why would Counselor Troi do that?
That's not usually... He usually sends Worf to do that, doesn't he? I feel like... I don't know why Worf's a better choice, but...
Well, Worf's the security guy, so...
Yeah, you know, if they're trouble, he's ready.
Exactly. He has no idea who these people are. And he's just agreeing to have them on his ship, which is fine, because, you know, he's their humanitarian effort. He wants to help. But you would think, just send one security person, just to make sure. But no, just send down Deanna Troi and see what happens. And we are introduced to Alcor, who is the kind of the other main character of this episode. He is this mediator who is, I forget what race they are.
I can't remember. So, I don't remember any of the races of any of the parties.
there are several races involved in this episode.
I guess there were two factions of one race, right? It was a single planet dispute, but I didn't understand.
And so he was on his, and he is there, and you can tell he's an alien because he has like a weird birthmark on his forehead. And he has his mother, who is this really old lady with crazy hair.
She was very effectively creepy. She didn't have very many scenes, but I was creeped out by his mother's, whatever her name was.
Yeah, she's pretty darn creepy. And she, you know, Counselor Troi's there, and she's like, hey, welcome to the Enterprise. I don't think she actually says that, but she welcomes them to the Enterprise. And the creepy old lady immediately says, you want to sleep with him, don't you? Well, you don't have anything to offer. And Alcor looks like he's a little embarrassed, and he's like, we've been traveling for a long time. She's very old. I think he does at some point say she's very old to excuse anything that she might say.
Apparently, catch all excuse.
Exactly. She's super old. Just ignore her. And then they shuffle her off into their quarters. And that's how it begins. Ooh. But Troi is shocked by the treatment that his mother gives her. And then
she's
they have.
Malevolent. She tells Riker he's malevolent.
Yes.
Evil. Riker is very dismissive. Troi, like, comes to him and is like, something's really off here. And Riker is just like, eh, I'm sure it's fine.
He's very dismissive. She's an old lady. She's crazy. You know how you women get.
In fact, he even agrees. He's like, well, she's very old. Right? As if that explains it.
Exactly. Well, you know, as you get older.
I mean, they've been serving together for 5 or 6 years. Do you think someone would trust Troi's instincts on this?
And Riker and Troi had this huge relationship before they even served together. So,
right. So I was very disappointed in Riker there. I'm like, come on, like, take her seriously.
No, he just wants to do these crew evaluations. And everything is getting in the way of him doing his paperwork. Riker's story arc is he needs to do crew evaluations. He cannot get them done. In the end, I'm sure there's a meeting with Picard. And Picard's like, where are the crew evaluations? And Riker's like, I couldn't get it done.
Yes.
He was obsessed with these crew evaluations.
He really was. He kept after hours, too. It never seemed to be during like the workday.
No. Well, you know, you want to relax with your crew evaluations in the evening. You know, do it with Counselor Troi. Counselor Troi, he does come by and say, hey, we need to do these things after Troi has another weird interaction, which we could talk about. So the things we know about Counselor Troi in general, she has relationships with people, and she really likes chocolate.
She does. Ice cream sundae. They throw back to the ice cream sundae.
Exactly. And not only – she's going to reward herself by not having just one ice cream sundae, but two ice cream sundaes. And I was watching this with my wife, and she was like, whoa, she's going to have two ice cream sundaes.
Yeah, like, that's a lot of ice cream.
That is a lot of ice cream.
Maybe they're very small. Maybe it's a very small serving.
Although I think I'm glad that I do not live in a world where food replicators are a thing, because I have trouble enough with my weight now when I actually have to like go somewhere or prepare my own meal. If I could just say whatever I wanted and it would materialize, it'd be no good for me.
Yeah. Replicators are weird. I mean, in terms of like it's not an energy efficient way to make food, right? Like if they're really turning like the mass energy directly into the matter, that's like incredibly power inefficient. Like it'd be much simpler just to store some grain somewhere on the ship. But whatever.
But then you couldn't say that you wanted tea Earl Grey hot and two ice cream sundaes, and it would just materialize.
That's true. Well, we'd love to have one, but...
But scientifically. This is where we can talk about a little
exactly,
science.
Exactly, talking about a little science. The utility bill, this may be crazy on that.
Well, that's the thing, right? This is... The Star Trek universe is interesting I think I was listening to John Syracuse talk about it. I think they were talking on Robot or Not, America's fastest growing podcast. They were talking about, I think, if the Enterprise is a robot or not.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that one yet.
And I believe, spoiler alert, the Enterprise is not a robot.
I think. Wait, I think I did listen to that one. You're right.
Well, I don't want to spoil it for you, even though I just did.
But it's a two-minute podcast. Let's be okay.
That's right. But he was talking about, and something that I thought about as well, that, you know, the Star Trek, or at least the Federation, is a post-scarcity economy, right? Because they have unlimited energy, and they can turn that unlimited energy into matter directly. So they don't need anything. No one needs to do anything because there's unlimited wealth, basically.
Right.
And yet the way they use these technologies is very frivolous, with holodecks and like making ice cream sundaes. You could do a lot more with this technology, and they seem not to even care about it.
Well, I guess Earth is a paradise, you know, why worry about, we can spend this energy on replicated ice cream sundaes.
That's fine. That's true. And then there are other episodes where the whole, like there was that Deep Space Nine episode, which we covered in Random Trek, I don't remember what episode, with the soil reclamators, and Bajor needed soil reclamators desperately. Yeah. And, you know, the Federation could just make them and beam them down, but they don't. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think they, you know, they've obviously got to service the plot. And so things like the universal translator, you know, sort of, it works when it needs to work, and then when it doesn't need to work. In service of the plot, it doesn't.
Right? Exactly. And though I do love those episodes where they come across an alien race that the Universal Translator does not work with, because it breaks down this central tenet of Star Trek, and you get to see these characters kind of flailing because this technology they rely on every day doesn't work. And they're like, how the heck are we going to do this? Let's just go find some other aliens. But this episode, there's another weird scene. There are a lot of weird scenes, I think, in this episode.
Yes, lots.
They're doing kind of Tai Chi, Klingon Tai Chi with Worf.
I want to know how many episodes that Tai Chi appears in. And I'm pretty sure in all of them, Troy is doing the Tai Chi. I could be wrong.
Yes. Well, Worf and Troy had a little relationship themselves, once again, Troy being defined by relationships.
Yes. Towards the end, right? So that's season 7, I think. Mm-hmm.
And so they're doing Tai Chi, and I guess Alcor wants to do a Tai Chi as well. So they're...
Why does he need to do Tai Chi if he's dumping all of his negative energy into this other woman? But
I sense, because he was looking slyly at Deanna, and Deanna was looking slyly at him the entire time. So I sense that there's a little something
romantic,
going on.
Romantic tension.
Yes. And then, you know, Worf is doing his Tai Chi, and a lot of people are in this Tai Chi class.
Well, 1,000 people on the ship, you know, a couple of people can go to Tai Chi.
And they, you know, Worf's like, okay, class is over, everybody leaves, Alcor and Deanna have a little chit-chat. The thing my wife noticed is that they just throw their towels anywhere and leave. And I thought, well, maybe they're in the holodeck, and those aren't real towels? I don't know.
Also not energy efficient, but whatever.
Also an awful idea to have on a starship in any way. The amount of trouble holodecks cause is ridiculous.
They really do. But, you know, great plot device.
It is a great plot device and a fantastic idea. So,
and we'd all want one. I mean, if we could have one, it'd be really fun, right? You could do all kinds of adventures and things.
Yeah, I'd totally be up for a holodeck. Although I think I would become addicted to it. Once again, feeding my addictions here. So I can't have unlimited food, and I certainly should not have a device that can create any fantasy I want and let me act it out. Because why would you want to go back to your normal life?
Well, it's like Barclay, right? I mean, it's understandable.
Exactly. And this is, I imagine, I think I talked about this in another episode too, that back on Earth, because nobody has to work, they don't need to do anything.
Right, why aren't they should just all be in holodecks all the time?
Yeah, so I imagine everyone's just always in a holodeck doing whatever they want by themselves in their little quarters. It's a very dystopian, that's the side of Star Trek that you don't see. Earth is just an entire holodeck-addicted planet. And the people who are in Starfleet have fled because they don't want to waste their lives, but they want to explore.
Must be it.
That's it. I've cracked open the puzzle that is Star Trek. And so Troy and Alcar walk back to his quarters, right? And then we have this another weird... interaction with Alcar's mom.
Right, very creepy again.
Yeah, and she's like, have you mated with him yet, to Deanna? And Deanna's like, what are you doing?
I think it would have been nice if the mystery of what's going on extended a little longer, because, like, we're only, like, I think 10 minutes into the show here, and very quickly, like, sort of the jig is up as to why. I guess we don't really learn until towards further on. But the mother dies relatively quickly.
She does die. She does. I think she dies pretty much after she accuses Deanna of mating with Alvar, and she tells him not to. She tells Deanna not to do that because she'll regret it.
Which is true.
Which,
well,
yes.
Sort of.
Well,
getting close to Alcor anyway was a bad idea.
Yes. And so Alcor's mom dies. The way she dies, she looks like a hamster. I found it very strange. She like has on her back and her hands are clutched in like claws, and it was weird.
I guess it's trying to tell, it's sort of like a Dorian Gray thing, right? It's like she died because of just emotional overload. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
No, I don't know. But then, and this is where Riker goes to Deanna Troi's office, or a quarters, not even her office, and is like, hey, we need to do this paperwork. And then he gets interrupted by Worf saying, we have a problem. And so Riker and Deanna both run up. They find Alcar's mom is dead. Alcar's very sad. Dr. Crusher doesn't know why she died, so they sweep her off into sickbay. Deanna Troi, being a counselor, and thinks, well, here's someone who's grieving. Perhaps I can use my counselor skills to help. Says, is there anything I can help you with, Alcor? And Alcor's like, well, actually, there's
big
this
mistake.
This is a super creepy ritual that I do to mourn.
With magical crystals.
That's right, with these rocks that I keep prominently displayed in this lovely commemorative carrying case. And so they do this thing where it's a very simple ritual, actually. And they each have to hold a rock. They obviously have to close your eyes because that's what you do when you do creepy morning rituals. They have to recite these things, and then one of Alcor's rocks actually starts to glow blue, and then he touches his rock to Deanna Troi's rock with her eyes are closed, and then her rock turns blue, and then her eyes open wide, and she looks horrified. And then I imagine if I were watching this on TV, that's when they cut to commercial.
Yeah. That was, as weird as... and. Strange as that ceremony was, like, I thought you could definitely, Marina acted very well and showed, you know, sort of that good reaction. I mean, you definitely knew something was very bad, something very bad had just happened, even though it didn't look particularly bad.
Yes. And then a lot of weird things start to happen. Troi is back in her quarters, and she, like, says, hey, computer, what are my appointments? And in another very cliche thing, she's clearly looking to find something to wear that she likes, and she's looking through all of her clothes, and she can't find anything, and the computer lists all of her appointments. And one of her appointments is Ensign Janeway, so I don't know if that has anything to do with
it. I noted that. I made a little write down. Yeah. Ensign Janeway, question mark. Yeah.
So who knows? I obviously, it can't be Captain Janeway. Because
no, it can't be.
But maybe a cousin or something.
Exactly.
But we never find out because Counselor Troi cancels all of her appointments before lunch. Because she doesn't feel like talking to anybody, I guess. I don't know.
Is this where she stares in the mirror? Was that happen right here?
I think...
sort of the mirror scene?
She does stare into the mirror. Is this when she's wearing her little...
Tai Chi outfit
Tai Chi outfit? Yes, this is super weird. Super weird. The weirdest scene, I think, in the entire episode.
By far.
Yeah, she stares into the mirror wearing her Tai Chi outfit. And then, basically... I don't know if I want to say gropes herself, but... She's doing some strange touching of herself.
Yeah, a very odd scene. For a second, I flashed back. I thought it was a different mirror scene where she kind of gets scared of her reflection, but that's a different episode. It was odd, and I didn't remember. I'd forgotten that scene had happened.
I forgot that. There are a lot of odd things. Basically... We're almost out of time, so we're going to skip a lot of stuff. But we will highlight Troy's weird... So something's weird's happening with Troi. We are sure of that. And all the while, Alcor is, you know, trying to do his mediator kind of thing.
Yeah, he's got... There's urgent negotiations happening, and for all intents and purposes, he's doing a good job.
Yes.
With them.
And the other members of his race are already there, and they are apparently screwing everything up. So he's coming in to save the day. Because he's super calm, as Troi has pointed out earlier in the episode. And now Troi is trying to seduce Alcor, and there's a scene where it looks like he's kind of into it, but then he says, we can't have this kind of relationship, and she's very angry, so she leaves. Then she notices that she has a wrinkle where she didn't have a wrinkle before, and then she really starts to transform. Her hair changes, she gets a big white streak in her hair, she puts on like a super sexy dress, and which she looks really good in, frankly. But also, it reminded me of one of Lwaxana Troy's dresses. So I was like, oh, that's nice. It's kind of like an echo to Lwaxana Troy. I don't know if that was purposeful or not, but I liked it. So
I remember, for some reason, the line that Data says when she walks into Ten Forward, Counselor Troy has altered her appearance. That line stuck with me. I remembered that line even before I rewatched it.
I wrote that down because I found it so amusing, because she has dramatically altered her appearance. And she comes into Ten Forward, and she basically confronts Alcar, and there's a female, whose name I don't remember, of his race, and she's like, you want to sleep with him, but you won't because you don't have anything to offer. And then she turns to the dude of the same race, and she's like, you're just jealous of him because he can't do as good a job as you. And Riker's like, whoa, what's going on? So he gets up, and he's like, Counselor Troy and I are wanted on the bridge. And then I thought for a second he was actually going to bring her to the bridge, and I was like, she is inappropriately dressed for the bridge. But he doesn't. But I would.
He tries to talk some sense into her.
He does.
Not knowing that she's basically possessed.
Right. And then she's like, oh, Imzadi, let's get it on, man. And he's like, well, okay. And then she, for no reason, scratches him. That was unclear why she did that.
It's not clear at all. I mean, if what's his name, Alcar, is dumping his negative energy, wouldn't she just really be tense and stressed out from the negotiating? Like, it's not clear to me why she, why she is having these particular emotions if she's just getting negative energy from Alcar.
Yeah, so that's a spoiler alert. Alcar, the little ritual was actually Alcar linking himself telepathically to her so he can dump all of his negative emotions into Counselor Troy. And he calls these people his receptacles. And that's what his mom wasn't actually his mom, but another one of his receptacles. And I guess he uses it so he can stay calm and focused on his negotiations. And then I'm assuming, so the bad emotions that he sends must be, I'm assuming lust, because both his receptacles that we saw were super into him, and jealousy, because they both were not happy when a woman came near him.
This guy must really be non-functional without these receptacles.
Yeah, you would think so. Well, we find out what happens when a receptacle is ripped away from him in the denouement of this episode. And I guess violence, too, which I guess would explain why she scratches him. I don't know. Yeah. But that it also explains why she, Counselor Troy, at this point super-aged, runs down to the transporter room where Alcor is going to transport down to the planet and says, you have to take me with you. And he's like, no, I can't because you're crazy. He doesn't say it like that. But and then she's like, I'm not crazy. I'll show you crazy. And takes out a knife and is going to kill him. But
totally forgot about that knife scene. I did not remember that.
I didn't remember that either. Captain Picard jumps in. Troy stabs Picard. And then everyone kind of pulls Troy off and sends her off to sickbay. And
she's already aged at this point, right? She's pretty aged.
She's very old at this point. And Alcar is like, maybe we shouldn't beam down. And Picard's like, no, totally beam down. It's fine. And then this is where they figure out that the other receptacle, who was his mother, was 30 years old, and she died. They don't know why she died, but she has elevated neurotransmitters, and Troy has elevated neurotransmitters. And so Captain Picard's like, I'm going to go talk to Alcar. He goes down to talk to Alcar. Alcar's basically like, listen, I'm important. I save people's lives. If I need to have a receptacle to help me with it, it's okay, because if you look at the balance sheet of life, I'm saving more lives than I'm harming.
He's really talking to the wrong captain if he wants to make this argument.
This is an argument that might work with Spock, because the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one, but it does not work with Captain Picard. Captain Picard basically says, you're a coward, you are taking advantage of people, this is wrong, and I'm going to stop you. And Alcar's like, good luck, and he leaves.
He must have some kind of diplomatic immunity, because they seem to be... Like, I mean, he seems to have done this to many of his own people. You think they could at least get him on that, like, you know.
And you would think that people would notice, because he has to have a receptacle. He says they usually last for years, but still, if you have a different mother every 5 years, someone will notice. But they figure out how to block it, and they trick him into trying to make someone else's receptacle, and then they transport her out, and then he's left without a receptacle. And
yeah, the ending is not as good. I mean, none of this episode is great, but the setup is a lot better than sort of the solution.
Yes, the solution is, it's like they wrote 38 minutes of a script, and then they thought, crap, we need to wrap this up. And so the way they wrap it up is they sever the link between Deanna Troi. They interrupt him before he can link to someone else. And then all of the, I guess, negative emotions flood back into him. And that means that he ages super rapidly. And just as Worf comes into his quarters, he dies. Not Worf, but Alcar. That would have been a twist.
I'm not a biologist. I'm not a biologist, but I don't think you can age rapidly or de-age rapidly.
Right. Deanna Troi de-ages, and he ages.
I will say this about, going back a second, I like how Crusher wouldn't give it up. She was the one that was sort of tenacious. She wanted to do an autopsy. She kind of hits the biofilter logs to try and figure out what's going on. She is suspicious, and she kind of sticks with it, and I kind of like that about her in this episode.
Yes, and she convinces Picard that even though Alcar doesn't want an autopsy done because he would know what's going to happen, that they should do it. And Picard's like, okay, do it. And they do it, and they solve it. So Crusher is really the hero of this episode.
She is. She's the hero of the episode.
So what did you think of this episode?
Well, I mean, like I said, it had some good acting, I thought, and some kind of creepy scenes, for if creepy is good, I guess. I mean, and but I don't know. It's just kind of, I mean, like I said, I kind of have issues with telepathy in general. Mm-hmm. I think this episode had some good scenes here and there, but like the ending doesn't really make any sense, and sort of the solution doesn't really make any sense. And, you know, it would have been more interesting if the stakes had been higher, like if they had to maybe really. To save Troi, they would have had to literally stop the negotiations or something to kind of raise the stakes of the trade-off.
Right. Well, I guess they do have to kill, quote-unquote kill, Deanna for a little bit, but she's not...
Apparently, Crusher, she's just like, oh, don't worry about it, Will. If she's only been dead for 30 minutes, I can bring her back. Like, that's just like apparently a standard procedure.
That's bringing people back.
Bringing people back from the dead that have only been dead for half an hour. I didn't know that was a thing, but...
Well, Dr. Crusher... is a very skilled doctor.
She's very good.
When the plot needs her to be, and when the plot needs her to not even notice simple things, she does not notice them. They're all slaves to the plot.
Yeah, well, that's true, I guess, of every episode of every show.
Right? It is true. And I agree with you. I think that this is one of those frustrating Star Trek episodes in which the concept is pretty cool. The execution is almost good. And the resolution is disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can tell they wrote it quickly. We read that, you know, on Memory Alpha or whatever, but I think it's pretty clear it was rushed. So yeah, not the worst episode of season 6-7, but obviously pretty in the bottom half.
I would agree. And I looking at my notes, I forgot one thing. Alcar's reaction when he realizes that his link with Troi was severed is hilarious, because he does the whole Macaulay Culkin hands to his sides of his face and goes, ah! It was very cheesy. And possibly my favorite moment in the episode.
Yeah, he wasn't... I don't know. I don't have... he didn't make much of an impression on me. I guess he's so calm and...
Right, well, he doesn't have any interesting traits, because he shunts all of the interesting emotions off to his receptacles. So he's just...
Let me say this about him. He tells Troi early on that he doesn't like to plan his negotiations. He just sort of feels his way through. Mm-hmm. And what's up with Star Trek negotiators that don't prepare? Like Reva said the same thing. Reva just like, I'll figure it out when I get there. Like,
I don't need to know anything about any. Yeah, Reva made it clear, like, I don't even research anybody. I just show up and see what happens.
So there seems to be this pattern of 24th century negotiators that just sort of wing their way through.
And it works out so well.
I mean, he did seem to be a good negotiator. I mean, he wasn't working without him, so that's the one thing you can say for Alcar.
He did successfully negotiate a peace treaty between these two warring factions. So,
I'm not sure why Spacefaring Society. I mean, wouldn't it just go to like some kind of massive nuclear exchange? If this is like a ground war on this planet, like I'm surprised it didn't escalate. But whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, luckily for us, it didn't, or else we wouldn't have had this episode. Well, Marcos, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun. Anytime.
Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine, Season 4, Episode 9, The Sword of Kalis. Ooh, Klingons.